One of the most important things to keep in mind in any relationship, and definitely when it comes to your workplace relationships, is that people's biggest advantages are equally their biggest disadvantages, and vice versa. People's disadvantages are always their biggest advantages. And if you can remember that, then you can mitigate kind of that, you know, you can mitigate some bad things. But also when people do something that maybe pisses you off or you think is wrong, you can think for a second and be like, well, I wouldn't necessarily trade out that character trait for this person because that would take away all this value on the flip side of the coin. And so better being able to understand that really well so that you can manage that.
Hello and welcome to the Making Better podcast, where we talk about making ourselves, our teams, and our organizations better. Whether you are a business leader, a talent development professional, or an individual contributor, this show will give you actionable insights to help you improve your own performance and the performance of those around you. Our guest today is Mendel Erlenwine. Mendel and I met recently on LinkedIn, and it didn't take me long to realize that I needed to have him on the show. He is the CEO of Previva Health Group, a leading preventative care management company. And a big part of our conversation today focuses on how he turned around that company and how talent played into that turnaround. During the conversation, you will learn how sometimes you need to take a leap if you really want to move forward, why so many leaders struggle with scaling, and how AI copilots are going to change the talent development landscape forever. Before we get into that discussion, if this is your first time listening to the show, I want to recommend that you make sure to subscribe to the show so you never miss a future episode. And if you were already subscribed, then I would like to ask you to share this show with at least one other person. That is how we grow, and I can't tell you how much it means to me. So with that, let's get into the conversation with Mendel Erlenwine. So this is a really interesting story that I think we have to get into. How did you become the CEO of Previva Health Group to begin with?
Yeah, great question. So bit of a trip down memory lane. So I had started in healthcare marketing, and I was running this company for this guy who had kind of like a conglomerate of healthcare companies, and he needed marketing support for all his companies. And so he said, why don't you stand up this marketing company? You'll support my stuff. And then, you know, whatever clients you can get on top of that, you'll make more money. And I was like, cool.
Yep.
So I was doing that, and I really didn't like it at all for two reasons, mainly. The first reason was I didn't really know what I was selling. So I was like trying to look out there, like, what are these services? Like, what am I selling? Didn't really understand it. And the second thing was that I was selling to doctors. And turns out, contrary to popular belief and contrary to what you might get sold on some Facebook ad, most doctors are not swimming in cash and are not looking they're not looking for random ancillary services to spend money on. maybe the plastic surgeons and the chiropractors, but not much of anyone else. And so I didn't sell anything. And so it kind of, that business kind of went down at a certain point, just wound it down. And soon after that, around that same period of time, mind you, at that point I was married, had just had my first child as well. And I got to know this guy who's he's kind of like an angel investor. He has a couple successful large companies, and he's an angel investor in a couple different companies. And I always enjoyed, even from a very young age, I would try to find people that are really successful and just, you know, talk to them, pick their brains, try to get to know them a little bit. And so I was doing that with, so I got to know him, and we had some good conversations around, you know, my aspirations, what I was doing. And one day he shot me a text and he was like, hey, I might have an opportunity for you. Do you want to chat? And my exact response was, I love opportunities. Sure. And so we sat down and he told me about this company that was doing these clinical services, but it wasn't really scaling and it wasn't scalable. Yep. And as such, the guy who had founded it, to his absolute credit, had to move on, and he had a family with it. I think he had four kids at the time, had to pay the bills. And so he had to move on. And my friend, the original investor in the company, was kind of left holding the bag. And so he said to me, if you want this, you can have it. And I was like, sure. And so I took over the company. And when I say took over the company, what I was taking over was a company that had a couple hundred patients, All the actual care was outsourced to a third-party company. So I like to call it just an invoicing company, because you essentially just sent invoices to clients and paid bills. And it was losing about $4,000 a month at that point. And I took it over and turned it around pretty quickly. I never took a cent from the investors from the second I took over. And a couple years later, now everything, the original goal was to do this, and we did it pretty quickly, where everything now is in-house. We have about 25 employees. We're talking to about 5,000 patients every month and growing. It's been a hell of a journey.
I can only imagine the whirlwind that would be. And just to highlight a few points from that story, because, you know, so this is, you know, primarily a talent development podcast. We're talking to people about how to improve performance. And it probably sounds to them like, wait, why are we talking about healthcare? I mean, sure, healthcare needs to be improved, especially in the US, but where does this fit with talent development? But from that story, like the two things or the couple things that really come across are, first, this idea that you turned it around. Right, that it was losing money and it became a profitable company and a growing profitable company. And then secondly, that you did that because it used to be an invoicing company. Like, they didn't have any particular talent within the company, and you brought all of that talent in as a way to turn organizations around. And I think that is the deeply held belief that I have, why I'm so interested in talent development, is because I do believe that it is a way to truly transform organizations and help them do more than they thought possible. So when you started that, so you get there, you're outsourcing everything, you realize, hey, this is probably the thing, bringing things in-house is what we need to do. How did you think about, what were some of the steps that you took of developing that talent? I mean, obviously, I'm sure hiring was a part of it, but like what else was there?
Yeah, well, even the hiring itself, and I think this, you know, even for talent development, you kind of have to be at the point where you can actually take that step. And I think for a lot of young CEOs, young executives, people that are starting out, the hiring process can be very intimidating. And it definitely was an interesting journey for me. And so I'd really start there, because it really is, if you're not going to take that jump, you have nobody to develop. You know what I mean? And so It was a couple months after I took over this company, I moved to a little town in Pennsylvania, because there was no employees. There was nothing tying me down to New York, where I was living at the time. And so I moved out here, and I was really, really bored. and I was sitting in my home office and not much to do. And that doesn't do very well for me. And so around that time, I was talking to different extraordinarily successful people. And I was, you know, like, what were kind of the secrets to your success? And the pattern that came across from everyone that I spoke to is they just had guts. Like, they just took the leap in whatever, you know, and that expressed itself in different scenarios through different people's careers. But that was kind of the medium. And the way I took that was that, you know what, it's finally time to take this leap, to actually start hiring and start taking on these employees. And it was, I remember speaking to my now partner and mentor, this original investor, and saying, listen, you know, we've been profitable, we've been successful kind of at level one, but I really think it's time that we, like, my exact words to him was, I said, you know, we've been successful at level one. Wouldn't it be more fun to fail at level 10? You know? And I said, let's do this. And one of two things is going to happen. Either we're going to make it big, or you're going to lose all your original investment and whatever, you know. And to his absolute credit, and he's been such an incredible mentor to me and partner in this regard, where he just absolutely backs me 100% all the time. And he's like, yeah, like, just do it, like, whatever it is. So I started looking for talent, and I've never hired anyone in my life. And I didn't even have offices at the time. I was scheduling, I was finding people. I think I put out ads somewhere, not ZipRecruiter, the other one, Indeed. And I was putting out ads, and I was literally sitting down with these people at like local Starbucks, because I didn't even have an office where to interview these people. And finally, after a couple interviews with a couple different nurses, I basically decided, I'm like, you know what, I think I got to get an office. This is just weird. And so I got this office space. It was totally empty, which in a way was even more weird, because now I'm asking people to come up to this like pretty large office. It was like 1700 square feet or 2000 square feet. And I was just one desk wait in the corner and like a sub office. Anyway, had people come in for an interview, and that's how I ended up hiring my first employee, who became my chief nursing officer, has been really one of the most key employees And today she's a huge, huge part of the success and growth of our company. But it's, I think it's important for your audience to understand that I was thinking about this a little bit ago, and I was thinking how that first hire became like literally my right-hand person. And yeah. But then I thought a second later, but you know what's interesting? A couple years down the line, I look back, yes, my first hire, I completely lucked out. But my second hire is no longer with me. My third hire, no longer with us. Fourth hire, no longer with us. I think like from her, the next five or six employees are no longer here. And we obviously rehired multiple times. And so just from a lesson perspective, like, and this was something that my partner drilled into my head time and time again, like, you're going to screw up at the hiring. You are going to make mistakes. You absolutely will. How would you not? You've never hired before. Yeah. And so you're absolutely going to do that. And that's totally fine. Like, that's the only way to actually get good at hiring and get good at firing, by the way, and get good at development. And so it's really been a bit of a journey, but that's how I kind of got started with hiring people.
That makes a lot of sense. I think one thing that I have to call out from the beginning of what you were just saying is this idea that, you know, would we rather be okay at level two or fail at level 10? And definitely for so many organizations, whether it's hiring, talent development, or just the business itself, we can get into safe mode, right? Where it's just about being safe. And oh man, would I suggest more people think exactly what you did of like, let's break the mold a little bit. Let's actually try to do something instead of just remaking the standard e-learning that we always make and put it out there because people expect it. We can all do better. But then specifically your story, one thing that I would be interested in when you were hiring, because I think whether you're hiring or developing, one of the things that you have to do is figure out what talent you need. Right. And like the order in which you put those can really impact things. For that first hire, was it really clear who you needed to hire or what talent you needed? Or did you have to think a little bit about identifying, you know, do I hire an office manager versus hiring the nurse like you did?
Yeah, it was kind of both, because it was very clear what I had to hire. But I didn't necessarily even have a full like workload or it, like on the one hand, it was clear. But on the other hand, the actual like what you're going to be doing day one, okay, now you show up, wasn't clear at all. We laugh about this, you know, years later. So back to my business, I was trying to bring something over in-house that until that point, I knew what we were selling very well, but I did not know how it was done because it was actually outsourced to a third party. And so it was really comical those first couple months. And it took a lot of patience on both of our parts, mainly her part, to really get there. Like one funny story. So we provide these services to healthcare organizations around the country, and we call their patients on their behalf. And so we kind of white label these numbers because we're extensions of various offices. I knew that that's what we did. I had no idea how to do it. So she literally downloaded an app on her phone to mask her caller ID to try to mimic these various, you know, couple clinics. And the best part was, I remember this one point where she literally, between like every 10 or 15 calls, she had to watch an ad in order to continue making phone calls. Like, we were that green, you know, like we were that level of we had no idea what was going on. But to your actual question, it did take a lot of patience on her part, a lot of flexibility and willing to learn. And I'd say that's definitely one of the super, super key traits that you want in an executive employee, somebody that you're looking at not just to pack boxes, somebody that you're looking at for really a kind of a leadership role, someone that's going to have a meaningful part of the company and a part of that company story. You really want to make sure that it's somebody that is willing to learn. If you're a young company, you don't have the money to hire top talent. You don't have the money to go out and pay these huge salaries for somebody that has a track record, somebody that's coming with a huge resume. And so it's really important to know, okay, what are some key, you know, character traits that I know that even though this person doesn't necessarily have the right experience right now, they will get there. And that's how you can kind of find a diamond in the rough. And for me, one of those really, really important things is, are you willing to learn? And if you're willing to learn, then you absolutely don't have to have all the experience in the world. And the opposite, I think, is true as well. If you have all the experience in the world, but you're not willing to learn, then there's really no amount of money that's worth paying for that kind of employee, because they'll never be able to evolve past their previous experiences or previous knowledge.
It's so true. I mean, yeah, I think it tells a lot about building any kind of team, you know, whether it's in a company or whether it's the company, you're building the company or building an individual team. And I've had discussions about this with some other people before, but yeah, those first few hires, you really are hiring the jack of all trades, kind of like they're gonna, it's just, they have to be super flexible. And then as the team gets bigger and bigger, then you still have to get that learning piece, but they can become more and more focused. Did you see that? I mean, you mentioned how the couple hires, you know, didn't work out well. I'm guessing from that first or second or few hires, the model of talent that you were looking for changed a little bit when you're talking about like number five or number six or things like that.
Yeah. So I'd say there's two points there. Point number one is there's two types of roles. There's kind of what you can call a rinse and repeat role, which means that if you create a really, really good system, you can move people in and out of that role and the end result won't change much, right? And then there's kind of key leadership people. And that's a very, very different talent that you're looking for. And it's really important to understand those key employees, you know, strengths and weaknesses. One of the most important things to keep in mind in any relationship, and definitely when it comes to your workplace relationships, is that people's biggest advantages are equally their biggest disadvantages, and vice versa. People's disadvantages are always their biggest advantages. And if you can remember that, then you can mitigate kind of that, you know, you can mitigate some bad things. But also when people do something that maybe pisses you off or you think is wrong, you can think for a second and be like, well, I wouldn't necessarily trade out that character trait for this person because that would take away all this value on the flip side of the coin. And so better being able to understand that really well so that you can manage that. And I think that to your point, this is a really great example because the character, the personality of that key employee that is going to be able to be really versatile and just whatever you throw at them, they'll take it, they'll run with it, they get things done. Very often that same type of personality doesn't know how to not do that and doesn't know how to. So when you're scaling your team and now it's like, well, that is a waste of your time. And we have all these employees that should be doing X, Y, Z, but because you're that type of personality and you're such a good person and you're incredible at just taking whatever's thrown at you, you know, you're being taken advantage of because you end up doing a bunch of stuff. And it literally got to the point I remember. And so I think it's our responsibility as team members of an executive team to watch out for one another. And you have to be there sometimes and almost do like an intervention with your teammates to say, listen, this is not worth your time. I remember at a certain point telling one of my key executives, I think it was like actually servicing patients, you know, and at that point we were much bigger and we had a team under, and that wasn't this person's key function anymore. And I remember telling her like, I will literally fire you if you do the thing that you think is making the company money. Because in this person's mind, it was like, I need to make the company money. That's my job. And when they came into the company, they were the first, second, third employee or two, whatever it was. And so it was like, everyone has to pull their weight. And now as the company grows, you start having these roles that are kind of second degree, really important. So as someone that's a manager or like an HR role or something like that, your role is extremely important for the company to operate. But at the same time, what you do doesn't equate to invoicing, right? Because you're not the person that's actually doing the service. And so this person, this one employee was one of those where like, you know, she kept trying to do the thing that would make the company money. And I was like, you are above that now, not in a better than that, but that is not your role anymore. And so and it actually continues, by the way, like every couple months, more and more things will pile up and my key executives will just catch. And then it just becomes too much. And then we, every couple months, like clockwork, we have a meeting where we're like, okay, now we got to move things off your plates, you know, delegate. And I have to do that for myself as well, you know? So
yeah, it's such a key reason why I do think a lot of startups struggle with talent development. And apologies for listeners if you hear anything. It's garbage day behind me and my neighbors decided to cut a tree down. So if you hear anything, that's what's happening. But it's such a key reason. I've seen this at many startups, and it all stems from exactly what you said of, you know, when many of those first hires, people on the executive team, they are people who just like to innovate solutions. They will handle anything. They'll come up with the new processes. But because that is their primary skill, they often don't, it doesn't even occur to them to like document solutions and come up with standard practices, because if it was their job, they wouldn't follow those practices. They'd want to like come up with a better way. And it doesn't even apply to them. I saw this, or it doesn't even occur to them. And I saw this all the time at SpaceX, where, you know, this super innovative company. So we have all these innovative minds. And when, somebody might make a great manager for figuring out how to land the Falcon 9. But then once they've figured out how to land it, you probably want a different manager in charge of the team who's just going to rinse and repeat, do it again, do it again. And it's something that it's why I think a lot of startups fail to do that initial groundwork lane of laying out those processes. So it sounds like one of the mechanisms that you had, or that you have to this day, is to kind of, you let things build up and then you just kind of try to clear it all out. Was there anything else that you implemented early on, especially in an organization that's doing a lot of outreach? Is there anything specific you did to develop those standard practices so you could hire people that were in more like rinse and repeat roles?
Yeah, great question. And you're absolutely spot on. And it's the evolution that you described is exactly true, where you start off where everything, you know, everyone's an entrepreneur in this little yes. startup. And then it starts becoming, no, you can't be an entrepreneur. You have to be a manager. You have to be an employee. You have to whatever. And so I'll just shout out a couple tools.
And others can't.
Yeah, exactly. And so there's a couple just tools that we use that have become really an integral part of our company. Loom has been one of them. And so I instituted a rule with all of our managers at a certain point when it was becoming like there were so many repetitive questions. I said, if somebody sends you a question, you're not allowed to answer them. You must go in, do a Loom on the answer, and then send them the link to the Loom, because now we can start building out a library of solutions, right? And so that was, I think, a good one. There's another tool that we use that I don't recall off the top of my head, but it's basically similar, where it's a Chrome extension, and then you can just do something and it will create screenshots of the step-by-step instructions automatically. I don't recall the name off the top of my head, but that's another one that we've used. And so instituting some of those things, we're saying, like some of those counterintuitive things, like you want to be helpful to your team. No, you can't be helpful in the way that you think is helpful. You have to be helpful in a way that's actually going to benefit the company and benefit yourself, because you can't scale past answering the same 100 questions every week. And you need to be able to scale past that. Those were some practical things that we've done.
Yeah, I think that's 100% been my experience. By chance, was the tool that you used before IORAD?
No.
No?
It's called something really simple, but I'm sure there's bunches of them out
there. Yeah, there's many of them out there. I have a friend who works at IORAD that does that kind of you click through and it makes those screenshots. Interestingly enough, I just got, because so many of these tools, the tools that you just mentioned, are very like kind of like computer focused. Mm-hmm. And I just got the Meta Ray-Ban sunglasses.
Okay.
They have like a speaker in them, like really good quality sound, and you can like live stream from them. Mm-hmm. And I want to run some experiments with some clients, because I think potentially these kinds of glasses will do the same thing for more like hands-on manual labor kind of stuff, where somebody keeps saying like, I can't figure out how to put this part together. And you're just like, okay, here you go. And you just record yourself doing it. It's like first person point of view, super easy way to seamlessly record yourself and set it on. I don't know. I think there's,
that makes a lot of sense.
Sidebar, but I think there's a lot of potential there.
Yeah. I think that makes a lot of sense.
Awesome. So you scale. Yeah. So I think those are great tips, I think, for helping to scale that company or scale any company. When you think about it, really does come back to don't just answer the question. You need to, it's that whole old adage of show somebody to fish, don't give them a fish kind of thing.
Yeah.
And now you're taking that to a whole other company. You're building this new company called Careco. I really want to spend some time on this too, because I think so many people are interested in AI. And as we get into this, I think I'd love to steer the conversation about the particular way you're using AI and how I think it can apply to all things AI, especially in talent development. But if you could take a second, what are you trying to do with Carico now?
Yeah, so Carico is a really incredible tool. So I've spent a large, good number of years really invested in the care coordination space. Like I mentioned, we have 25 care coordinators. We're talking a couple thousand patients a month. And so really understanding some of the pain points, the opportunities that are unique to the space. And then it just kind of, I've been developing the solution that is really, really hyper geared towards this very, very specific use case. So it's a co-pilot that is for the care coordinators. And so it's actually for a lot of those rinse and repeat type roles that you mentioned. It's really about creating a platform that can standardize all the education around it, can standardize all the task management side of it, and really just take away a lot of the tedious things that usually ends up becoming the differentiator between a successful care coordinator, in my case, and a non-successful care coordinator. So if you don't have good experience with documenting or knowing everything there is to know about care coordination, we're really building out the brain of the care coordinator and then allowing them to just do what they're good at, which is just take the information given to them and really present it over to the patients in a very meaningful way. And so it's about really going back to kind of the strengths and weaknesses thing, really understanding my team's strengths and weaknesses, and then just trying to build a solution that would allow them to amplify their strengths and get rid of their weaknesses. Because, and this goes back to talent development, by the way, and I do this with myself. When I hire people, when I used to hire people, thank God now HR does that and it's been incredible. but when I hire people, I ask them what they enjoy doing. I don't ask them what they're good at. And I've found a 100% correlation between what people are good at and what they enjoy doing. And not always are the things that people think they're good at what they're actually good at. But if you ask them what they enjoy doing, you'll probably get that answer a lot quicker. And nobody wants to put somebody in a position of something that they're not good at. Why? Like, that's just inefficient from their perspective, from your perspective. They're not going to enjoy working there. You're not going to enjoy having them there. They're not going to be productive. And so, it's kind of like I started taking flight lessons for a little bit. This is a very basic example, but there's like there's this battery in the plane, and one of the things on the checklist that you have to check is if the battery is charging. And so it's this little, it's this little screen that basically would show and discharging or recharging of the battery. And I think that every interaction that we have, this is in general a social lesson, but specifically when it comes to employees and work, like it's a binary choice between those two, discharging or recharging your battery. Like there are certain things that you do that will drain you. And there are other things that you do that energize you. And as much as you can, you should try to only do the things that energize you. Not one of these Gen Z, like do what you love type messaging. Yeah. It's just about efficiency and productivity. Chances are if you enjoy doing a thing, then you're going to be good at it because you're going to enjoy it. And if you hate doing a thing, you're going to procrastinate. You're going to suck at it. You know what I mean? And so I found that to be, we kind of looped back, but I found that to be a pretty good metric as well to use.
It totally makes sense. And I think really what something like a co-pilot does is it allows you to fully lean into the particular skill or talent, because the co-pilot is like you said, picking them up on the other side. I'd be interested for these particular roles, these care coordinators, what is this allow you to do of like, what are the skills that this co-pilot can now take on? And then what are the skills that remain the core human element that you want them to be good at?
Yeah. So in my instance, it's basically anything that requires your brain. Anything that requires knowledge, anything that requires memory, anything that requires and administrative things like documentation and things like that. All of that is wrapped up in the brain side of the
basic
application.
Memory recall.
Yep. And then what I'm trying to just keep the human is what the human, I think, is really good at, which is the actual delivery of said care. And so you don't want to, you as a patient, you don't want to talk to a bot. You don't want, contrary to what a lot of people think, at least for the next 20 to 50 years, and I would argue even beyond that, you don't want to be talking to some sort of system. You want to talk to a person. And until, I don't even think there's a conversation to be started until AI somehow hacks empathy. But specifically in care, healthcare is a human enterprise. It's a human business. It's a human to human thing. And so, yes, patients don't enjoy interacting with humans if it's going to be extremely inefficient and very difficult for them to get what they need done. That's always annoying. No one likes being put on hold, and no one likes, you know, but that's the point of merging these two things together, because on the flip side, patients don't, like I said, I don't think they want to be talking to a bot. And so if you can create a scenario where the human being does nothing more than what they're good at, which is deliver the care and coordinate the actual care, then you can really get the best of both worlds.
Totally makes sense. There's an author called, her name's Annie Murphy Paul, and she recently came out with a book called The Extended Mind.
Okay.
And it's exactly about this kind of thing. I think for anybody in talent development or in business, or it's these co-pilots can do so many things, or AI in general. You know, I think in the learning development space, so much of what we've been focusing on with AI is the creation, is rapid creation, right? So it allows for generative creation, allows us to, you know, create an outline of such on such and such topic, or create quiz questions based on this document or things like that. And that has its place and it's interesting, but everything that you're saying at a much more fundamental level, strategically bringing in AI co-pilots into particular roles in your organization is going to be a fundamental part of talent development in the future, of identifying finding the tools out there if they exist, potentially building them if they don't exist, so that you can do exactly what you just said of changing what the key skill is. And, you know, because right now, you know, previous to this, or in the current world, there's probably lots of need to hire care coordinators who aren't super empathetic, but man, do they just have a memory. Like, they're never going to get the process wrong. And that's potentially leading to worse care. Whereas if you can just focus on the empathy piece and let the machine, you know, that extended mind idea of put the skill over here, I think it's going to unlock a lot of new talent in organizations and really transform the way people continue to work. So I think I just love when we were chatting the other day, I loved that you focused on this idea of, you could call it, augmentation rather than replacement, because so much of the AI conversation has been on replacement. And like you said, we're just a long ways away from that being possible. Whereas the augmentation piece is arguably here.
Yeah. You know, Matt, if I may, there's one other piece that, not to disjoint the conversation, but there's a piece to talent development that I've been rolling over my head for a bunch of months. And I don't think I found the right wording and packaging for it. So maybe you can help me out, but I really believe very strongly, because I've seen a lot of success. This has come natural to me, and I've seen a lot of success with this method of leadership. So this is kind of like from a leadership perspective on the talent development. And I've also seen in other organizations, I'm on the board of a school and a couple different things. And I've seen through some other organizations where they lack this core concept and how detrimental it is, and how it literally runs through the entire organization and just kills everybody from top down. And the framework that I've used, and I don't know if this translates well, so you'll help me, but the framework that I've used is that when you're delegating responsibility, there has to be an equal parity between the responsibility delegated and the authority delegated to that person.
100%.
And the biggest problem that I've seen in organizations is where there's a mismatch, and you might have the responsibility to get XYZ done, but you don't actually have the authority to make that happen. And in a worst case scenario, often is like this, your typical middle management person is when they have the authority over a certain thing, but they don't have the ultimate responsibility over that thing. That's like the biggest problem with middle management. They have the authority to like boss around the people under them and to really destroy their lives and make them whatever, but they don't bear the responsibility of what that does to the larger business, right? Or the opposite, when you have an executive that is too nitty gritty. And so they give you the responsibility to get XYZ done, but they hold the authority to actually implement, to hire, fire, whatever that might be. They hold that authority. And so I'm looking for a good framework or some good words to have it, but I think it's so important, that concept.
I couldn't agree with you more on that. I mean, man, I mean, it's like some of the words you just said, it's like you pulled them right out of my brain. Cause, and I think this really factors in larger organizations. I like to think when I was in the military, I think this is one of the biggest challenges in the military and in any large organization, in that there's this weird mismatch. And I think this drives the disconnect between, there's often some strange disconnect between like the CEO level or the top level and the worker level. And sometimes it's the manager level, the director level, but there's always a mismatch. And what often happens is the things that most annoy people in the organization are too trivial for executive leaders to handle, but too big for the level below them to handle. There's really no one in the organization who has both, like you said, the responsibility and the authority. For some reason, it just breaks up. So I don't know if I have better language than you, because I always use that same language that you use of that distinction between responsibility and authority. I think it drives, to your point, it drives a lot of the challenges of middle management, of really anybody in any organization. It's one of the most frustrating things for an individual, of knowing you're tasked with doing something, but you can't actually do the things you need to do in order to make it happen. I think it really stems. I mean, the close, have you, being in small business, have you ever read EO or heard of EOS? So EOS, it stands for the Entrepreneurial Operating System. And there's a book called Traction that walks through the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And one of the things in the book that they do that I thought was interesting, one of the points that they do, is rather than building an org chart, they build an accountability chart, where they think about a company and pretend you remove all the people from the company and just say, what are the things that have to get done? And there's usually like five or six things at the top, you know, like finance, sales, or, you know, there's five, and then those can break down into smaller and smaller organizations. But I think the challenge that happens at organizations, especially as they're growing, is that you hire and develop the structure based on personality, right? Just based on who was there or who's good at something. And that's why you will get leaders who for some reason have two responsibilities that are completely different from one another, or why you have engineers in two different parts of the company or something like that. And so that's why they have an exercise in the book Traction, which says, pretend nobody works at the company and build this accountability chart, and then take all the people in the company and go back to what you just said. What do they enjoy doing? What are they best at? And slot them into those positions.
I love that.
That's
awesome.
I would check that out, because I think I 100% agree. It's a major problem. And I think some of it stems from this organic growth that companies have, where they don't think, they never get the opportunity to step back and just be like, what are the things that need to get done and who should be doing
it? Yeah. And for your audience, I'd have to imagine a lot of them are probably in management or leadership positions. It's very easy to see this go wrong in other people, but it's really, really important to focus in on yourself, because if you're the person delegating, you know, typically the middle management problem is the person that has more authority than they do responsibility. But when you're going from founding a company or starting a company or being in a really, really crucial role to having to delegate, it's so easy to slip into that role where you've given somebody the responsibility to do something, but you retain the authority. And so make sure you're looking in yourself and say, like, institute those small things. Like, it could be as stupid as telling your employees, when there were three employees, they used to come to you to ask for PTO or something like that. But no, now you have a manager, you don't get to give them that permission, even though you're the boss's boss or whatever it is. You don't get to do that if you want a healthy organization. Make sure that if you've told somebody that your HR or whatever that role is, they actually have the authority to make those calls.
Yeah, I think that's, 100% agree with that. Awesome. Well, to wind this down a little bit, there's a couple questions we kind of try to end with, and I'll probably just focus on two of them. The first one is, what is one book or podcast that everybody should read or listen to, and why?
That's a great question. I'm biased because I happen to be middle of founders, which is your your boy Elon Musk and his story of creating X.com and PayPal. Yeah, and that whole story. So I happen to be in the middle of there, which I find to be quite riveting. And I'm a listener, but I'll tell you a fun one, a really good read. That's a fun one, which is a book by Scott Adams, one of his first, one of his early books called How to Fail at Almost Everything and Still Win Big. I found it to be a very enjoyable read, very comedic read, but also very important, a very important read because it kind of gives you this perspective and this understanding that life is about steps and you're going places and you don't have to succeed at like, it spaces it. Do you have it?
No, it's a different, it's a different book. So finish it all.
Okay. So anyway, it's something I read a couple years ago and still comes to mind. So I'd say that's a great book. There's obviously dozens of various different business books, psychology books and things like that. But, I think that's a good, fun, easy call out.
I love it. Yeah. I just, as you were talking about that, it reminded me, this was actually, I've never seen anybody else who read this book, but it was kind of pivotal to me. It was a book by, he's a DJ called Bobby Bones.
Okay.
And it's called Fail Until You Don't.
That's great.
Very, very similar kind of idea. I think probably chances are. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's love great. That. Podcast wise, I'd say, obviously Making Better by,
thank you. Yeah.
Podcasts. I mean, I tend to listen to recently. I listened to like the All In Pod. I've been doing that for a couple months.
Yeah.
Just kind of keep prize the situation. Big Ben Shapiro guy for politics. But yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of them.
Yeah, there are a lot of them. awesome. So then when you reflect back on all of your successes, what do you think is one skill that's most helped you be successful?
Yeah. And it's funny because nobody actually thinks that they're successful. So the question came with an assumption. But I'd say two things. The first thing is that I have this theory, which is that it's impossible for you to think ahead of yourself in business farther than the amount of time you have behind you. It's a perspective game. Mm. And so like when you start, and so many people are starting businesses, it's impossible for them to think even a year ahead. Like if you start, if you're 20 years old and you're starting a business, and I tell you, here's a really, really good lead. It's going to be a big account or a medium-sized account, but it's going to take you 2 years to land them. You're going to be like, dude, get out of here. Like if they're not closing next week, like don't talk to me, right? But then once you've been in business for 10 years, all of a sudden a year doesn't really seem like much. And you're like, yeah, that's like par for the course. And so I think the first thing is to recognize that you know, the fact that we have that issue. And then the second thing is then finding people that are ahead of you in life and then taking their advice, listening to their perspective, but then actually believing them. And I think that for a lot of people and actually listening to them. And I think that for a lot of people, you know, since we don't see the things happen fast enough, and this is myself included, and this is something that I continue to tell myself, but I think I've been relatively successful at it, which is, you know, it's so hard to not see things move at the speed that we expect it to. And, you know, in hindsight, things always moved quickly, but in the day to day, it always seems really slow. Totally. And so being able to get out of your own on the ground perspective and go trust somebody that's got their eyes a decade, 2 decades, 3 decades ahead of you, and then actually believe them when they say you're on the right path or you're on the wrong path, actually trust them and then take those actions instead of just like jumping from thing to thing, from Bitcoin to this, to that, to whatever's the next shiny thing. I think that's something that I've, despite my strongest instincts, I've been somewhat successful at.
That is such a great one because you're right. Like the instinct is to just, oh, it's different this time, or oh, they don't, you know, maybe that was true when they were growing up. The times have changed, and they don't. And if you wait 5 or 10 years, you find out that they didn't. So that's an interesting or really great one of just, it's not just the typical advice that you get of, oh, go find people who are more experienced, go seek out mentors, but just the sheer believing them is a big step. That's great, Mendel. So I think that's a great place to end. I've really, really enjoyed this conversation. Thank you so much. I think we touched on a bunch of stuff. All the success. I wish all the success for you as you build up Careco and get that going. So thank you so much. And we'll make sure to check in 6-12 months to see how it's all going.
Thanks for having me. This was an absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for tuning in today. If you liked the discussion, make sure to hit like and subscribe so you never miss an episode. As a reminder, if your team is struggling keeping up with the training development demands of your organization, we want to help. Better Everyday Studios is a full-service instructional design team that can help you with everything from ideation to actual content creation and delivery. Please reach out to us using the link in the episode notes below. Have a great day.